The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Starz. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Outlander Cast. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I have been dying, absolutely dying to do this live cast. I've been so excited. I can't wait to just actually participate with everybody and talk with everybody. And if you have a keen eye on Periscope as this episode begins, we're both wearing Star Wars shirts. That's right. We are both wearing Star Wars shirts. And if you're not listening to this live, don't worry about it. Everything here, it's not going to be, you are just as much as included in this conversation as everybody else that's in the chat room or on Periscope. Please don't feel like you're left out. You're not. You're just as important to us as everybody else. So anyway, my love, you ready? Are you ready for season two of Outlander?
I am. I'm totally ready. I'm so incredibly excited.
I know. And hey, guys, actually, as a matter of fact, I wanted to let you know that anybody that is on Periscope or that is on Mixlr in the chat room, please, if you have any questions for us, if you want us to answer something, if you just want to chat with us, you want to make fun of us, you want to have a good time with us, please post it in the chat room or please post it on Periscope and we will try our best to get to you the best that we can. And in the meantime, I think we're just going to have fun with this.
We are. Perfect.
We're just going to do it. So are you ready for season two?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited. You know, it was the trailer that did it for me. It was that final moment of Claire being, you know, there at the end saying, I'm back. And oh my word, like, What is that about?
You're going to find out, Blake.
I know,
going
I know.
To find out, you non-book reader, you.
And as much as I'm having fun with this particular live cast, I wanted to let you, everybody know that is listening right now and that is listening after this has been recorded, that we're going to be having another live cast, but it won't be just Mary and I. In fact, it will be Mary and I and some of our blog staff writers, including our editor-in-chief, Kendra Spring Classic. We will all be there. We will all be talking. It will be live. You'll be able to listen to it. I think we'll be periscoping on our end. And all of the bloggers will be there, like I said. And it's going to be a great clan gathering. So it will be an hour before the episode begins or before the episode goes live on April 9th. So I'd say probably like 7:45-ish. Mm-hmm. And then it will go up until 8:45-ish. And then after the episode is over, we will have an instant take episode with more of our bloggers, another clan gathering, and we'll all be together talking about it. And you can interact with us at any time and have fun with it. And I think that's going to be a fun thing. I think, you know, I kind of like this live casting thing.
You should.
Especially on Periscope. And I kind of want to do it more because it's great interaction. And it's you get the video and you get to see our little studio here, like I've said before. And I don't know. I'm really into it. I'm looking forward to season two, specifically again because of Claire being back. But I have a great Outlandish Theory of the Week that I'm really looking forward to as well. And if you heard our last episode, check it out. I think it's episode 40. As a matter of fact, it's the French history episode, 18th century France. My Outlandish Theory of the Week then was that Claire and Jamie have always gone back to France, and Claire has always gone back to Scotland, and it's just a part of history. So whatever Claire tries to do in order to change history, it won't succeed because it's already happened. You know, because let's consider this just for one moment. I know I want to get to the top five things, but let's just consider this for one moment. Let's say Claire does succeed. Let's say Claire tries to change history, and maybe she does. What does that say about the timeline? What does that say about alternate universes? Is that something that Diana delves into? And to personally, for me, I'm not sure she does. I mean, how the hell do you get 9 books or 10 books out of this, as a matter of fact? How do you get 10 books, you know, that will be coming out soon, if you don't broaden your perspective, if you don't broaden how much you're telling this story? But if you start going into alternate realities and accepting things as they are, that complicates things pretty heavily. I mean, don't you think?
Oh, totally.
That does. That complicates things, and it convolutes the storyline, and you'd get bogged down in details. And that's why I feel like Claire's not going to succeed. Claire, it's not going to happen. Culloden will happen, and Bonnie Prince Charlie will go and take out, or at least try to take out the English in England. And I think that is possible. But in the meantime, I think we should stop wasting everybody's time and actually get into the reason why we are all here, which is to hear our top five favorite things about Outlander Season 1, and also what the one thing is. What are we doing?
It's okay. Periscope people are having difficulty hearing us, so I'm trying to see if that will help.
Okay. That sucks that Periscope people can't hear us. I wonder why not.
I don't know. But however, everyone on our site can hear us, so that's one of the good things.
Okay, good. All right. Well, you know, I think, you know, live casting is not a science. It's an art. It is an art. I tested everything. Everything seemed to be working fine. I don't know why it's not. What can you do? Anyway, so let's get into the show. Let's do it. So, my love, do you want to start or shall I start?
You should start.
All right. My number five, we're going to go 5-1 here. So, 5 being, you know, the fifth most favorite thing of the episode. But I would have to say that my number 5 is, and this is going to sound really bad. In fact, that's going to sound terrible. But I have to say it. It's the trauma that Jamie went through in the last two episodes.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because it created a real conflict for Jamie. And it furthered the plot, obviously, but it was a character-based thing. He was literally tortured, right? And he was tricked. He was forced to think that Blackjack was Claire. He gave up on life, and he was willing to die. He had accepted it. And now, going forward, what does that mean for the character? The story is important, and what that does for the story going forward, I'm sure it propels a lot of things. But what does that mean for the character, right? I think the character itself will be tormented by this, and that will weigh heavily, and mm-hmm. that will inform, I think, a lot of his feelings about Claire, about being put in a position like that again, and it will inform a lot of his decisions going forward. Because you have to think, you must be pretty emasculated when not only are you being raped, but you've also accepted the fact that you're going to die. Right? You're going to die, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. What does that do for the character? And that's what's most important. And that is not possible without the trauma that Jamie went through. Am I a sadist? No. Did I enjoy seeing, you know, Jamie get raped? Did I enjoy seeing the hammer and the nail going through his hand? No, of course I didn't. I mean, it's entertainment, you know, as I put it in quotations, and it is entertaining, but the most important thing is how that affects Jamie, the character. And I think it's going to have a huge, huge impact on him. And it makes it for an interesting layer of Jamie, and that the King of Men, you know, he was treated as such. And what does he do from there? And how does that affect his relationship with Claire? You talk a lot about depression and how you feel about yourself, and you got to imagine that this probably sends him into a pretty dark place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of self-evident. So how does that affect his relationship with Claire? And if they have this baby and they do all these things in France, I mean, man, being able to deal with that's pretty tough. That's mine. What do you got for your number five, my love?
My number five is Scotland.
Scotland?
Yes.
How's that?
Okay, so I've never been to Scotland. I am Scottish. And of course, now that you know where season two of Outlander is starting to go,
right,
I'm really, really happy that we were able to see so much of Scotland in season one. I've talked about it before, how Scotland to me was like another major character in Outlander season one. It mm-hmm. was stunning. It's made me want to go there even more. It's made you want to go to Scotland,
right,
which is awesome, because I've been saying many times, like, hey, we should go to Scotland. And now you want to go. Now you really want to go.
I do.
And I think not only that, but it's been able to help other people who may not have ever thought about going to Scotland as tourists. It's made them want to go, and it's also made people learn about Scottish history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aside from Braveheart, very few people know about the Jacobites or about anything that goes on with Scotland.
Well, I would say very few people know about the Jacobites at all, period.
Yeah. So I think that Outlander has really helped promote Scotland as a whole, its history, its culture. It's made bagpipes cool.
Mary
McCreary, of course, was very excited about that. It's made a person like me who loves Scottish music really excited. And I'm just pumped that Scotland was able to be shown in such a beautiful way that it really helped promote the country and its history and its landscape.
I would agree. And I think that's a great number. Let's get into number four. Number four for me is The Devil's Mark. That episode, well, I actually got two in there. The Devil's Mark was almost a high water mark for Outlander, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that it can't reach that level again, but what happened in that episode, and actually go back and listen to our, shameless plug, our interview with Mike Barker, the director of that episode. I think it's episode 30-ish, 32, maybe. Go back and listen to that if you haven't got a chance yet. Mike Barker talks about The Devil's Mark. And I really liked the courtroom scene, and, you know, I think we're going to a fucking barbecue, and how Galus lets everybody know about the mark on her arm in 1968 and all this other stuff, and then her going to get, you know, burned at the pyre, really, as a witch. I thought that was all fantastic. It lulled a little bit right beforehand in where they were being held captive in that hole in the ground. But the Devil's Mark itself was a fantastic episode. But where it sold me was when Claire admits to Jamie that she is, in fact, from the future. And his reaction to it, he wasn't like, oh my God, that's full of crap, you know, or you're crazy, or did you take your pills today, or, you know, stuff like that. He didn't say any of that.
Did you take your pills today? I don't think Jamie would have said that. Maybe he would have been like, did you eat your flowers today?
Yeah. How much you been drinking, lady? I know we've been tipping back on the whiskey a lot. But no, he didn't do any of that. He actually supported her and, you know, said, you know, it would have been a lot easier if you were just a witch. You know, I thought that was really cute. And again, it's those character moments. It wasn't the fact that Galus was being burned that was great, even though that was really cool as she was being carted off, and the courtroom scene and the testimonies and all that other stuff. But it was them sitting on that log in the creek and or wherever it was, and then her and then she telling Jamie about how she's from the future, and the whole montage, and talking about planes and what was it? Elephants?
Elephants.
Yeah, yep. It was elephants. And that was remarkable character work. Listen, you can give me all the splendor in the world, like Batman versus Superman, if you guys have got a chance to see this movie yet. But listen, the idea of Batman versus Superman is freaking awesome, right? It's two of the world's most famous superheroes fighting each other. How can that movie not be awesome? And I'll tell you, it wasn't. In fact, it kind of sucked. It sucked because, yes, while it's cool to see Batman versus Superman fighting, there was no character buildup. There was no motivations. It was just them. And while it looks beautiful, the idea behind it just didn't exist. It was all fluff and nothing real.
Aww.
And that's where Outlander needs to go. And that's what it needs to keep doing. It needs to keep working within this character framework. And that's why The Devil's Mark, I feel like, is a high watermark. Although I think it's a close second, or maybe even tied, would be The Garrison Commander. That to me was phenomenal, but I will be talking about The Garrison Commander later.
Okay.
So I will leave that for then. My love, what is your number four?
The score.
The score?
Yes. I mean, hello. I'm a musician, so I have to give huge props to Bear.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that all of the musicians are so talented. Once again, just like I was talking about Scotland, I think that we're able, through Outlander and through Bear's music, we're able to bring about instruments and melodies that the general public may not always get to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's bagpipes or just, oh gosh, the little flute that he has for Claire, like all this kind of stuff.
Or even the clarinet.
The clarinet for Frank.
Yes, right.
Oh my gosh. I think that he has woven such a beautiful, beautiful score. I've gotten to know Bear's music a little bit more. Just a side note, Blake and I have been watching Battlestar Galactica to get our Ron Moore, Bear McCreary fix a little bit more. Blake had seen it and he was like, you have to watch this.
This was Mary's homework during Droughtlander.
Yeah.
I was like, if we are going to continue podcasting about a Ron Moore show, you need to watch Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I think I kind of like the BSG soundtrack better. I kind of do. I go back and forth. I listen. Okay. I hear an Outlander soundtrack and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Outlander is a lot more cinematic.
Yes.
It's a lot more complete.
Yes.
But the unique nature of the BSG soundtrack, oh my, if you guys are soundtrack files or whatever, however you call that, if you guys are soundtrack nuts, please, especially season 3 of BSG, listen to the season 3 soundtrack. Amazing. Anyway, my love, continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I just love the music. If I had to go back and forth right now, I am liking Outlander's better. That's mm-hmm. okay. That's all right. I have not been disappointed with a single piece that came out on the CD that Bear wrote.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
So whereas in BSG, there's been like one or two times where I'm
yeah.
like, Bear.
Like when the Pegasus showed up, you had that weird like porn
Twilight?
Music. Yeah, like weird porn Twilight music.
I did. I was like, this sounds like Twilight music.
I'm going to bring it up.
No,
I'm totally going to bring it up.
No,
I'm going to do it.
Don't make me relive it. Anyway, the score is definitely number four. I just love it. Being able to speak with both Bear and Rhea and interview them for Outlander Cast was such an awesome experience, and it made me love the score even more.
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't listened to those interviews, head on over to outlandercast.com.
Here it is.
Oh, here we go. The BSG sound that I was like, oh yeah.
Like weird Twilight porn style music. Listen.
All right, please, I'm done. I'm totally done. What's your number three favorite thing from Outlander season 1?
Oh, that was funny. Number three, John Gary Steele. And the crowd goes silent. Who is John Gary Steele? Oh, by the way, before I go into that, Mary and I always like to do this. We always like to have a competition between us. And,
what?
Well, the last two live casts, we've had a competition.
Oh.
To see who is better, who has the better top five.
Oh, okay.
So please, I would like your votes. I would like your votes.
Okay.
And let us know who has the better top five. Unfortunately, last time Mary kicked my ass, so I refuse to let that happen again. And I will totally rig the process if I have to in order to win this particular competition. But number three is John Gary Steele. My love, do you know who John Gary Steele is? Ah, the sound. The sound of silence. It's deafening.
The sound of silence.
John Gary Steele is the production designer of Outlander. And what does the production designer do? He actually creates the sets and everything that goes on that you see with all the details in Outlander. Mm-hmm. You know, he decorates Castle Leok. He makes the witch's hole, whatever they were standing in. He makes the torture chamber. He does all of this stuff. Everything that you see, the production designer creates it. Now, he doesn't light it like the cinematographer does. He doesn't direct it like the director does, but he builds it and designs it. And John Gary Steele did a fantastic job for Outlander, seeing the detail that went in to the production. Like, I remember seeing Castle Leok when Claire and Frank went down into the bowels of the castle, and you know they were getting it on the table in Claire's future or past, or I'm not even sure how you would classify that, her workspace. I remember seeing all the dust and the cobwebs, but all the little details of like the candles and the mm-hmm. books, and how everything they have all like little, not potions, but little elixirs and extracts and bones and everything, and everything that's at Claire's disposal. Like, and then going to Galus's house, how detailed that was. But then seeing everything on the watch at Jamie's house. I thought that was just unbelievable, and it looks like he's continuing his fantastic work in season two, scouting out all those locations and seeing like where that big library that Jamie and I think the Duke of Sandringham is in, and then of course you can't even let go of what Claire and Jamie's apartment looks like as well for season two. You've mm-hmm. seen it in the trailers, right?
Yep.
So this man is exceptionally good at his job, and nobody ever really talks about him because it's not very flashy. You don't really know his name, but his work is phenomenal. So please, that's my number three. My love, what do you have for your number three?
My number three, I don't know, Blake, how you're gonna feel about this, but my number three are the costumes.
Of course. You know what? You placate to the fans so much.
What are you talking about?
You totally
I am a
did
fan,
that.
Blake.
You totally.
I'm sorry that you and your non-book reader ways and everything's like, this is so new. This is so new. No, this is stuff that I've literally had in my head for so long, and I've been trying to envision what Claire's wedding dress would look like. Mm-hmm. Everything, all these little tidbits. I mean, just the detail that they have and being able to learn from Terry and talk about the historical significance of these pieces. I mean, it's just been so incredibly exciting to see all of these great costumes, even the men. The men's costuming is so cool. And even that scene when Jamie's putting on his kilt. But, you know, it's just so exciting to see how brilliant they were.
Did you just purr?
Yes.
Do it again.
Kind of sounds like Chewbacca.
Yeah. We are wearing Star Wars shirts.
We are. But, you know, every single little bit of detail of these costumes, and the most amazing thing I think about the costumes mm-hmm. in season one is even though the colors are, to be honest, like kind of muted, you know, the Scottish colors are really like greens and grays and browns and stuff. It's not the opulence that we're going to see in season two.
Yep.
It's not the red dress. It's not all of these.
Yeah, well, hold
brilliant
on. Time out. What is the big deal with this red dress?
Listen, non-book reader, just you'll find out, okay? I can't keep hiding things from you and looking off into the wall and acting like whatever. Anyway, you'll find out. You'll find out soon enough.
Oh my
so
God.
That's my number three, are the costumes.
Okay, you know, and I will actually go along with you on this a little bit. And where the costumes got me, seeing the kilts and the wedding dress and all that stuff was fantastic. Great. Loved it. But what really got me was the British soldiers' uniforms. They weren't perfect and pristine, like how they were like in the movie The Patriot, you know, the one with Mel Gibson. They weren't like bright red and perfectly cleaned and pressed. And these guys, you know, went through it, and it was dirty, and they weren't just off the rack, if you know what I mean. they were used, they were aged, and they were missing buttons, and the boots had dirt all over them. They weren't perfectly shined.
I love that you're just like explaining why my point is so good right now.
Costumes
are great. Continue.
Costumes
continue
are
to make
great.
Me win.
You know what? Oh my God. Playing to the masses. That's what you're doing. Unbelievable. All right. Fine. Well, let's get to the number two. I still maintain that John Gary Steele is a better choice than costumes. All right. So my number two is kind of like your number four, which is
okay.
Bear McCreary.
Oh, love.
Bear McCreary, and I'm not going to talk about it because we did talk a ton about Bear McCreary in his work, but Bear McCreary himself, I think, has evolved over time. His work on The Walking Dead is good. It's a lot of tone music, so it doesn't stand out in particular in many ways, although I will say his work for The Governor is The Pulse. Actually, I wrote a note about this on the blog, a big blog post. If you go, it's the top 10 songs from Bear McCreary as a composer, which does include some work from Outlander. But he has evolved. He has definitely become more cinematic. He has definitely become more complete. He has an eclectic taste. He does tend to overuse drums, and he does tend to pound it into the ground with the drums. But his work on Outlander, especially with the bagpipes, and then picking something, like I said earlier, like a clarinet for Frank. And the reason why he picks the clarinet is because the clarinet is totally foreign to Jamie in Scotland in the 1740s. It didn't exist. So that's why he chooses the clarinet for Frank, because only Frank would know what the clarinet sounds like. And that level of detail, that level of thinking about Outlander, and the time and the theme and the tone of what he wants to create, he is becoming a major player, not just in the television industry, but now he's making his step forward into the cinema world. And, you know, he just composed 10 Cloverfield Lane,
mm-hmm.
the movie that's taking the world, the pop culture by storm. excuse me. So... But Bear McCreary's work in this show, it defines the show. Like, everybody talks about Scotland and the scenery, and again, the cinematography, or even the set, or even the production design. I agree. But what sets the real tone for this show is the score. It is a complete other character. Once you hear the bagpipes, like from now on, whenever I hear bagpipes, I will be thinking about Outlander, specifically because of Bear's work,
mm-hmm.
and his use of the bagpipes and the hurdy-gurdy and all that stuff, it's so uniquely Outlander now that you can say that it defines the show. Like how the music in Lost, that defined the show, right? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, I have to play my Lost sound.
We have to go back, Kate.
There you go. That defined the show. And now that's happening with Outlander. And he has totally set the tone. So I love Bear McCreary. My love, what's your number two?
My number two is the chemistry between the actors.
Oh, my God. More playing to the masses.
Once again, Blake, I am the masses. I don't know why you keep forgetting that I'm an Outlander fan. Literally, what is wrong with you? They are believable. They are precious. Okay, first and foremost, the actors themselves are just amazing and exciting. And I just love everything about, like, this upcoming week where we're going to be able to see them on American television. But even on these little videos that we've been able to see, I just love them as individuals. I love everybody, but I especially love our lead actors. And I think that the chemistry could not have been any better for our Jamie and Claire.
I would agree. I agree. Are you a shipper?
No.
No, you're not a shipper? You don't really care if they're together or not?
No.
In real life?
No.
Because it does, I mean, obviously it does, they have this amazing chemistry, so I could see how people would think that. I mean, I'm not a shipper either, I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this whole shipping community that is like out there, and they like, they firmly believe that either Sam and Kat are like together.
Yes.
Or they're not.
Yes.
Like in like, okay. How dare you? Like, it's crazy.
I'm not a shipper. So for those of you who don't know, I have worked in the television and film industries. And listen, this is part of the gig. You gotta have good chemistry if that's your job. And I'm so thankful that they do. They seem like they are just adorable, amazing friends. And I don't know. I don't know what goes on. I don't need to know, because all I need is what comes on my TV.
Yeah, that's what matters most, right? As long as the chemistry is alive and it percolates through your television set, mm-hmm. that's all that matters, right? I mean, who cares if they're together in real life or not?
The only thing, I mean, and some people are talking about this right now in Mixer, the one thing that I would really stick to that I'd be like, please kind of don't be together in real life, because God forbid you have a fight or anything and you break up, that won't do so well for your on-screen chemistry.
That happened on that show, Dexter. Dexter was married to the lady who plays his sister on Dexter. Mm-hmm. And then they got divorced halfway through the show. There was 8 seasons, and they got divorced in like season 4. And then they still had to play like this really tight, really close, niched like brother sister relationship, and it was like so awkward. So yes, I can see why you don't want them together. So because you don't want that, you don't want the chemistry to disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost kind of like, you know. It's tantalizing. You kind of want it to be true.
Well, of course. So we're not actors, you or I,
right.
And we've never had to pretend to be in love with someone or sexually attracted to someone else other than, you know, you
I don't
or
think I. Could do it.
Well, exactly. It's tough, but you know, that's what actors get to do. And it's great that they are such good friends and they get to have fun and they get to be goofy. And thank God they have a sense of humor, because they have to do some really intimate scenes. And if they didn't get to have that great rapport with one another, mm-hmm. they wouldn't be able to act as passionately and sexually with one another.
Right.
As you said, I couldn't do it. I couldn't go up. I mean, maybe. No. But I couldn't
whoa,
go up.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Time out.
I'm joking, Blake.
That's another timeout. That's the second timeout of this podcast. Oh, my word.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm not an actress, so God bless them both.
What's a famous example of chemistry not working, in your opinion? Like someone who just was... One of my famous examples...
Yeah.
Is Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson in The Hunger Games. Those two...
It was supposed to be a little awkward.
It was painful.
Okay, I'll just say Batman.
It was painful. Batman, who? Batman with who?
Any of them. Any Batman, I'm like, none of you actually love each other.
Yeah. Oh, it was painful.
None of them.
It was painful watching those two.
I don't believe Batman. You know what? But Batman, I just think, is selfish. Like, so, different topic.
I believed Kristen Stewart and what's his bucket there? Robert Pattinson more than
they actually were in love.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know, but whatever.
Okay.
Okay. Number. All right. Here we go. We're gonna.
No, you're number one.
Okay. Hold on. All right. Number one. The number one thing I liked in Outlander, and I'm gonna get killed for this. And I got a feeling. I just know that I'm gonna lose this one because specifically of my number one.
Because you already saw mine.
No, but I. Well, I mean.
You can okay. see the Google Doc. You
yeah,
know
oh, yeah, okay, I do see it. Oh, my God, that's... Oh, it's so cheating.
Whatevs.
I'm taking risks here. I'm bringing stuff to the table.
Let everyone know the suspense has been
all right,
built.
My number one, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Blackjack Randall, oh, my God. The problem that Outlander had and it faced was that it wasn't... You didn't have a clear antagonist. And the only clear antagonist that you had was Blackjack Randall. When he was not on the screen, I don't want to say it didn't drag. It wasn't a lull, but there just wasn't this menacing force that pushed Jamie and Claire to do what they needed to do until he showed up. And he would have these long bouts of not being on the show.
Okay, are you doing like Blackjack Randall / Anne Frank, or is it straight up BJR?
BJR, man. Because I love Frank. Don't get me wrong. I'm totally team Frank. But Blackjack Randall, what he did... First of all, Tobias Menzies on screen is electric. He commands... He dominates every single scene that he is in. And that's hard for me to say, too, because I always thought he was kind of like a weasel. Like every show that he's ever been on or every movie he's ever been on, he's been kind of weaselly prior to Outlander. I haven't seen his work yet since Outlander, like some of the new stuff that he's been on. But he's been kind of weaselly. He's been kind of like, I don't know. He's just kind of like been like dinkish. I don't know. That's a word, dinkish.
I don't know. You just made it one.
Why not? Sure. I'm from Boston. I can do that. And I can sound smart doing it too. How do you like that? He is absolutely electric on screen. And the way he changes his voice, it kind of goes a little deeper. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And his movements, his subtle movements, like with his lips and his tongue and his hands,
the tongue thing,
right? And like when he's drawing, Claire, in the Garrison Commander, and the way that he just, the way that he holds himself, the man is terrifying. And when he is on screen, he pushes Claire and Jamie. He pushes Jamie. He pushes Claire. And he makes them do things that they, one, don't want to do, or two, don't know if they can do. And he gives them a reason. He gives you a reason to be scared. And for every television show there is, your show or your movie is just as good as your antagonist or your villain. Let's say that. The Dark Knight is a total example of this. Without the Joker and Heath Ledger's performance, The Dark Knight, first of all, is not in the top 20 greatest films of all time. But what Batman has to go through in The Dark Knight doesn't have the character weight. It doesn't have the story weight. It doesn't have the dramatic weight that it does unless the villain, who is the Joker, is as good as he is. And that's what Black Jack Randall does for Outlander.
I would agree that Black Jack Randall is an amazing villain.
He really is. He's great. And I don't even want to say villain. I want to say antagonist. Because villain, when I think of villain, mm-hmm. I think of like mustache twirling. I'm going to tie you up on the railroad tracks.
Okay.
And Black Jack Randall, and that's the other thing that I like about him. He's not just evil for evil's sake.
Mm-hmm.
He's evil because his character, who he is messed up. He's screwed up in the head.
Yeah.
He knows he has these urges, and he knows he likes Jamie, and he likes Jamie because of X, Y, and Z, and he does things based on his I don't want to say love, but his affection or his obsession with Jamie, and what he does to Claire, because he is messed up. He doesn't care. He's going to do whatever it takes to further himself. And that, he is multi-layered, and that's why he's such a fantastic antagonist and not a villain.
Okay.
My love, what do you got for your number one?
My number one is the fact that Outlander was finally brought to the small screen.
I just lost this entire competition. That's it.
Whatevs.
Call it a night.
Whatevs.
Don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here, kid.
Once again, Blake, you're not a book reader, so you do not appreciate or understand. There's no way that you could get to this, okay? It is something that we have been dreaming of and wishing for and hoping for, and it's not only on a screen, but it's on a television screen, which means that we get to see the plot lines have the time and room to breathe, not like a movie, you know, mm-hmm. not here's your hour and a half, 2.5 hour movie, but honest to God, a real television series.
Mm-hmm.
So excited. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Well, it couldn't have succeeded as a movie. It really couldn't. I don't care what anybody says. If you're going to do it as a movie, you'd have to do like book one as a movie, right? You couldn't do the whole story that's been created. You'd have to make it a franchise like The Hunger Games or my love, you ready for this one?
Yep.
I want you to say it. I want you to understand what I'm about to say. What's another famous book series that you love?
Harry Potter.
You're a wizard, Harry.
That's right. That's the first You're a Wizard, Harry of the season. That is season 2's first official You're a Wizard, Harry, just for you. And I teed that up for you. Do you like that?
Thank you. I was actually going to say earlier that you're Team Slytherin, and that is why BGR is your number one.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm totally Team. I'm such a Slytherin. It's pretty pathetic. And my wife, my beautiful wife, who's sitting across the way from me, is a Gryffindor through and through. Just does stuff without thinking, shows up, she's brave, she is smart, she's beautiful, but she's just, man, she's tough, and that she's a total Gryffindor. Type A Gryffindor, and I'm a type A Slytherin. Oh. I lie and I cheat and I do everything I can to win. So that is your number one. Do you have anything else to add to your number one?
No, that's really it.
That's what you got?
Those are my top five. So my top five is Scotland, Bear McCreary's score, the costumes, the chemistry between the actors, and the fact that Outlander was finally brought to the small screen. A close follow-up would have been just the discussions that Outlander has brought about to our community, to the television community, to people who may not have heard about Outlander, but in general, the discussions about love, about infidelity and cheating, and is this, what would you think about this?
Right.
Even abuse. And abuse, particularly male-on-male abuse,
yep.
To be able to say that this is something that does happen. And, you know, as we've talked about in previous podcast episodes, my mom didn't even understand it.
Yeah.
So I had to sit down and explain it to her. So that was my close, like, almost made it into my top five, is just the discussions that not only you and I have been able to have, but we've been able to have as a community.
Right, yeah.
And even as just, like, people who aren't in love with Outlander, but they watch an episode or two and it makes them talk.
Right. And I'm going to go with you because rape was a popular device that was used this year on television, and we have three specific instances that I can remember, mm-hmm. which is Game of Thrones with, spoiler alert, Sansa, and then Leftovers, spoiler alert, with Meg, and now, obviously, Outlander with BJR and Jamie. I will say that I will give Stars and the crew of Outlander and Ron Moore credit for going full bore the way they did with the rape scene. How they weren't afraid to show it, how they weren't afraid to let the viewer experience it and know the trauma that Jamie went through.
Mm-hmm.
I probably should have said this with my number five. They took it to a level that some people were uncomfortable with. And I respect that. I don't agree with it, but I respect it. And it's a scary thing, and you don't see it on television.
Correct.
And they had the balls to do it. And I give them a lot of credit for that. But a close number, I'd say number 5B for me, that almost made it into my top five, mm-hmm. and this kind of goes along with that, is Anna Forster. Anna Forster was the director of episodes 7 and 8 and 15 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we had her on the show, so please go back and listen to that. I think that's earlier in season 1B or 1A. We had her on the show, and she is just a force of nature. She is unbelievable. Not only is she a warm and kind person, but she is a fantastic director. What she gave to Outlander, the kind of credibility she gave Outlander and the shots that she created, like she had that famous shot of the two rings in, mm-hmm. in Claire's hands, and the famous shot of Claire speaking to Black Jack Randall with the fire. When she was telling him that Black Jack Randall's gonna die, remember my favorite shot in that whole episode was her reaching up to him, you know,
yes.
With the fire in the background and their silhouettes, and then also that great shot too of the beginning of episode, was it 16? Yeah, 16 with Jamie and his hand on the ground, and it kind of traversed up his arm, and you saw his dead eyes in his face,
mm-hmm.
as the episode began. That's all Anna Forster. What she gave Outlander a lot of cinematic heft, and it was fantastic. So that is the top five that we both like and we both wanted from Outlander. So that's that. But my love, what is the one thing you want to see improved for season two?
Improved.
You want me to give mine first?
You go first.
Okay. My first is, well, my thing that I want them to improve is the writing consistency. You know, I love Outlander. The problem that it had is that it had these really great highs, you know, as a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Garrison Commander up here. You had The Wedding up here. Devil's Mark up here. You know, you could even go as far as saying maybe To Ransom a Man's Soul up here. But then you had these really, really bad episodes like The Search or Reckoning. And I know people love Reckoning or The Reckoning. I can't stand it. It was just oh my God, it was just, it was muddled. It was, it had the wrong tone. It was almost insecure of itself. And, you know, a friend of the show, Matt Roberts, wrote it, and I know he called us out for giving it a bad rating, and I'm fine with that. But it had these really high highs and really low lows. And that's why you didn't see it get an Emmy for Best Outstanding Drama. That's why it's not getting the awards, because there isn't this total high level consistency throughout the whole season. They need to improve how they handle the characters. And I know they're kind of stuck too, because they have to adapt what was written. You know, they have mm-hmm. That's the story. And you don't want to deviate too much, because you don't want to piss off book readers. But, I mean, this is the man that created Battlestar Galactica and Ron Moore. He knows how to write television. And he, in my opinion, should be a lot more consistent with the quality of the episodes that he's putting out, the writing. He can't have these big lulls. If there is any chance for Outlander to win any Emmys or more Golden Globes or whatever, he needs to give the characters more consistent, complete writing. So that's that. My love, do you have something that you want them to improve?
I want, in general, Outlander to, the fandom of Outlander and its reach to grow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how that's possible. I think that they're doing a great job right now. We've been able to see that Stars has a huge lineup of appearances for the Stars, as I was saying. I want the Outlander fandom to grow. I have faith in season 3 that it will happen. Blake just wrote a blog post about how season 3 will happen. So he has a lot of faith about it. I love this. I love this series. I love how deeply rooted the fandom already is. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's just so much potential and so much more that we can do. You know, we put a lot of pressure on Stars. Mm-hmm. We put a lot of pressure on the people who are in charge. I mean, they're working their butts off. And we, as Outlander fans, I think need to take it on and say, all right, now it's our job. It's our time to help do this, because I think that we could help it come to the next level. So in my opinion, if you own the DVDs, give it to a friend at work to borrow. Mm-hmm. Say, you know what? Watch this. You got to do this, or have someone over. I mean, it's been free. It's even showing this weekend. So I think that people just need to share the love about it on Facebook. They need to share the love about it on Instagram or Twitter. And you know, just like people are sharing right now this chat on Periscope, just let people see that word Outlander. Just keep showing it to them. Keep talking about it, because it needs to get bigger, because it's such an amazing series and I just want the rest of the world to know about it.
It's kind of like what we always say, you know, if our podcast is a good enough companion to the real show Outlander for you, please do us a favor and just let people know that we exist. Let people know that we're here. Because we all, us in the show and the other great podcasts that cover Outlander, like The Scott and Assassinach and A Dream of Outlander and The Outlander Podcast, we all need the promotion. We are one giant community. I don't look at those guys as competitors. I look at them as teammates. Granted, we're all competing, I mean, technically, for the same listeners and everything, but I don't care. If somebody enjoys The Scott and Assassinach more than us, great! Awesome. They're giving you more than what we can give. Or if you're enjoying us more than them, great. We're giving you more than they're giving you. So we're all teammates, and our job as a fandom, and the people who did this really well were like the fans of Hannibal, that television show. They promoted the heck out of Hannibal. And they did it to such degree that NBC actually relied on them to promote that show. I was just peeking at Mary's iPad, and on her iPad, she has the Periscope live feed.
Got a lot of things going on right now, guys.
I know. She does a good job. I don't know how she does it all.
I can also pat my head around my back.
And she's a mom at the same time. Imagine that. She's a superwoman. Screw Gal Gadot. It's Mary Larson that's Wonder Woman. I was just peeking at that, and I saw someone ask, when will season 3 be announced? Now, obviously, there isn't a season 3 announcement yet. And they're not going to announce it at any time soon, because historically, and again, I wrote this article on the blog. Historically, you see seasons one and two kind of either one be announced in tandem or season two, like very shortly after season one begins, because they want viewers to know that they are committed to the show that they're creating. So that's why you saw Outlander season two be renewed almost immediately, right? But when it comes to season three, networks want to make sure that the first two seasons that they gave of that show pleased people, that the ratings are good. And once they see that, then they're going to renew the show. And historically, networks tend to renew shows when they do at around the 1 or 2 month mark after season two premieres. So you're probably going to see an announcement 1 or 2 months after season, after April 9th. So if we haven't heard something by about April, I'd say June 9th, we have an issue. Or if we haven't heard something by the time the season ends, we have an issue. But rest easy, folks. This, due to the current stature of television, how many programs there are, it's going to happen. Starz needs the content, and Starz needs to make sure that people are subscribing to their content. So trust me, don't worry, it's coming. It'll happen very soon. But this will actually open up things for you guys. If you have any questions in the meantime, please let Mary know in the chat room on Mixlr, or please let her know on Periscope if you have any questions that you want us to answer. We will certainly take the time to answer them. Hold on.
You look at Periscope.
Okay, I'll look at Periscope.
And I'll look over here. I can't multitask that much. My goodness gracious. So yes, if any of you have any questions, I'm really excited about it. So Creedry says that another thing that should be improved, the character development for certain characters, like Jamie. He actually had a great deal sense of humor in the book, so mm-hmm. to see more depth, and I think we will get that. I think that this season had to just kind of set the scene, set what's going on in history, and I have faith that they're going to do future character development. What do
right.
you think, Blake?
I totally agree. We actually have a question here from the Ron and Terry Show. Do we have any interviews coming up? I'm going to say yes, but I cannot announce them quite yet because. No, I can't do it. I'd like to, but I can't. We have to get permission from Starz to talk about that. So that'll be that. But we do have things lined up coming.
Want to know how you can help?
Yes.
If you tweet Starz and you say, "Hey, we'd love for OutlanderCast to get an interview with XYZ,"
right?
That would help.
Right. I think that'd be great. Please tweet at everybody. They want to know if we're going to the Tartan Parade. No, we are not going.
We are not going. We can't. We have our son's third birthday on actually April 9th. So the April 9th is going to be a very, very busy day for us.
Yes, it is. That's right. That's going to be it's going to be a How to Train Your Dragon party, and it's going to be crazy. We're just going to have How to Train Your Dragon playing throughout the entire house. It's going to be crazy.
Daphne Hines asked, do we think that the opening sequence will be updated?
Yes, I do. It looks like they had everything from season one on the first one, and that would make sense if they updated it. I just hope they don't change the theme song, specifically because we'd have to change our theme song, and that would piss me off. Because everything in the show is changing so much, the setting and the characters and everything, you need to have some kind of base from which you can work and something familiar so that you still feel connected to the material. So I think the theme song should remain the same if that's the case.
Some questions over here on Mixlr we have. Has Blake ever asked me to spoil a bit of Outlander? And the question is no. He wants to stay 100% unspoiled, so I haven't done that for him. And right. Creedy also asked if we're going to have live podcasts after any of the episodes.
Oh, well, we are definitely doing it on the premiere. Maybe we'll do it on the finale, too. That might be a good idea. What else? We had a question here. I'm sorry, I forget your name because it's already gone back. But they think that is 13 episodes going to be too little? for season two. Now, I didn't read the book, so I can't speak to the content in the books, but this 13 episodes, like what we got in season one for 16 episodes, that's a rarity now in television. In fact, the networks, well, pay networks like HBO and Stars and Showtime, even like AMC, they're moving to a model now where you're even getting only 10 episodes. And that's a good thing, honestly, because it trims out all the fat. Say what you will about BSG. I love that show, but there's a lot of filler. There's a lot of filler in BSG. But the main arcs are fantastic. You see, like, shows like Blindspot and Blacklist, all those commercial network shows like on NBC and ABC, they have like 24 episode arc, and it's just too much. It's too much television. So when you start trimming fat, it streamlines the storytelling process. It streamlines everything. So that's that. So 13 episodes. I think it's a great idea. Again, any other questions?
There's been some about book related things that I can't say.
Can't do that. No books.
And I hope that all of you get to watch all of the different interviews that are going to be going on this week. Very exciting stuff. Thank you so much for your questions. Anything else over on Periscope?
Nope. Nobody is asking any questions. I think that is all.
Awesome.
If you have any other final questions, please get them in now because we only have about 5 or 4 minutes left or so.
Yes.
Actually, 3-4 minutes. So...
So a quick thing for those of you who are brand new to us, welcome, welcome, welcome. So excited to have you here live for this podcast. It's been so awesome to be on Periscope and on Mixlr. We really appreciate your coming and spending your Saturday afternoon, or for some of you, this might be your Saturday night or your Saturday morning. We don't know. But next Saturday, we're going to be watching Outlander.
That's
and
right.
Blake, what else do we have in store for the next week?
Well, actually, Claudie on... on Periscope here, she asks, or is it Clody? I'm not sure. She asks, when the next podcast? And Reed Margaret says she enjoyed the history lesson. Thank you. We enjoy doing it. But Clody, the next podcast that we will be doing, it will be a live cast, as a matter of fact, again, here on Periscope. It will be on the 9th, an hour before the show. So I think we'll start with the clan gathering of us and the blog writers at 7:45, and we'll go for an hour. And then after that, once the premiere is over, we will have a instant take episode. So as soon as the premiere is over, please run to Periscope and run to outlandercast.com, and we will be there waiting for you live with our instant take on the episode. So that is that. My love, are you ready to close out this show?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do it.
So this outlandish theory of the week, do you have an outlandish theory?
Yes, I do. The outlandish theory of the week, I forgot to do this, is actually brought to you by the Wick of Time Soy Candles. Bring the Scottish Highlands into your home with their Outlander-themed candle. Check out this and their various book-themed candles on Etsy.com and save 10% from us with the code SASANOK.
So that's In the Wick of Time.
That's right.
Soy Candles. How cute is that?
In the Wick of Time Soy Candles on Etsy.com. And
your outlandish theory, Blake.
Outlandish theory of the week. Blackjack Randall ain't dead, baby. And in fact, he's coming back. He's coming back in season two. And I got a feeling it's going to be relatively early. I think it's going to happen episode 3 or 4-ish. I'm gonna go there. Because, again, they need this villain or antagonist. And he's going to push the story along. So that is that. This episode is over. Oh, by the way, guys, who won? That's what I want to know. Who won?
I did.
No, get out of here, you.
You know
what?
We're
going
to have a poll on Facebook in like 5 minutes.
Head on
over to facebook.com/outlandercast and vote in the poll. Let us know if I won or if Blake won. I'm going to make that.
Clody
right
just
now.
Said, Mary, Clody, I answered your question. I picked you out personally. And you're taking Mary's side.
I'm
Thanks,
make
Clody.
This poll,
I appreciate
though.
That.
So, guys, make sure you head on over to our Facebook page to vote in this poll, especially if you think I should win. I definitely want you to head on over to
Clody,
Facebook.
Yeah, Clody, you should be sorry. That's okay. No problem.
Guys, check out OutlanderCast.com for all previous interviews, all of our episodes. Get excited. Get excited because Droughtlander, it's ending.
It's ending.
The drought is ending, guys. The flood of episodes.
Get in touch with us at outlandercast@gmail.com. And if you do want to support us, again, like I said, please just let everybody know that our podcast exists. Tell a friend. Tell a friend on Facebook. Tell a friend on Twitter. Smoke signals, Instagram. I don't care, whatever you do. And that's that. Please.
Make sure you're subscribed in iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And also make sure that you're signed up for our newsletter. Our time on Mixlr is over. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.